Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest tonight grew up in Texas, played football for Ohio State University, and then coached there under the legendary Woody Hayes. He's also been a Marine, a stockbroker, a rancher, a fly fisherman, and since 1997, the executive director of the Division 1A Athletic Directors Association. A true Renaissance man. His name, Dutch Boffman, and we're honored to have him as our guest. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible, presented by Trust in Us on News Talk 760, WJR.
Now back to Anything Is Possible with Jack Krasula on News Talk 760 WJR. Brought to you by Trust in Us, a world-class executive search firm. Now, here's Jack.
We're talking to Dutch Boffman, the executive director of the Division 1A Athletic Directors Association. Dutch, welcome. It's an honor to have you.
Jack, thank you so much. It's my pleasure to be with you today.
Can we start by talking about your childhood and your parents?
Yes, sir. That would be wonderful. I was very fortunate, Jack, and I think the older I become, the more I realize how fortunate I was in that I grew up in a Christian home. I was very fortunate to have a very strong grandfather influence in my life. I learned to this day the core values that helped me make decisions today, helped me choose my behaviors today. I realize that as I look back over my life, it was the wonderful childhood that I had. Grew up in kind of a rural setting on a ranch in Texas. And I was probably about 12 years old before I realized that not everybody in the world was a rancher or a teacher or the preacher or the feed salesman. But it was a very wonderful childhood, and I truly can see the benefits of that today.
What did your dad do, and what did you learn from your mom, and what did you learn from dad?
Oh, my, Jack. My dad was in agriculture and ranching, and he left that at a very early age and was offered an opportunity with what was called at that time the Farm Bureau Co-op, which was affiliated with the Nationwide Insurance Company. And they asked him to come in and manage their transportation office, which meant that he was responsible for their airplanes and picking up board members and bringing them to board meetings and all of the transportation issues that went on with the Nationwide Insurance Company and Farm Bureau Co-op throughout the year. He had no background in that, but he was a very strong, ethical, principled man, and it was recognized by folks, and he was hired actually because of that, and I can recall him sitting at the table late in the evening studying business administration to learn how to transition the knowledge he had to that that would be most appropriate for the new opportunity with the Farm Bureau Co-op. He worked very hard to make that happen. He was very successful at that and developed very close personal relationships with board members and the president of the company and as well as the custodians. He was a very special kind of guy, and that I can say to this day, Jack, he's the kindest man I've ever known. Never heard him say a negative word about anybody. I guess in my pre-teen years, my mother came down with multiple sclerosis and required a great deal of personal effort on my dad's part to care for my mother. Never heard him complain about any of the sacrifices he made and the care he gave to my mother. But he was a man that always cared about how we all were doing and always focused more on family and friends than he did on himself. But a very, very strong, ethical man. And like I said, I realize more and more every day how much the decisions I make and the behaviors I choose today are based on the core values I learned from my dad and my mother. My mother was also a very strong Christian lady, insisted that we had devotions in the home as well as regular attendance at church. But she lived her life that way, not just on Sundays, but throughout the week. She, like I said, she contracted multiple sclerosis, and clearly at that time, years and years ago, there was not the medical advances that we know of today, and there were a lot of mysteries still at that time. But throughout all the difficulties she faced, she always maintained a very pleasant and loving, compassionate demeanor toward everyone around her. So I was very, very fortunate, Jack.
You decide to go to Ohio State University. You get a degree there in athletic administration, and you play football for this guy named Woody Hayes. What'd you learn from Woody Hayes?
Oh, Jack. Oh, my goodness. I think it's characterized, well, my goodness, so many things. As a student athlete, at first I thought he was not only very, very strict and very hard on his players, but maybe even unfair. But then I realized how immature I was in my own perspective. And I didn't realize that at the time. I found that out later. But he had a very high standard for behavior and performance. But what I learned later was that standard he set for everyone around him was not nearly as high as the standard he set for himself. Yeah, I came to really admire that a great deal in Coach Hayes. He was a man that focused, he was a very complex individual in that he focused, in football anyway, performance-wise, mainly on performance of the fundamentals. There was nothing fancy about him. Lots of repetitions in practice. I could go on the rest of the day talking about Woody stories, and when I see my friends like Rex Kern and so on, guys I played with, that's what we end up doing, is talking about Woody stories. But I learned so much from him as a student athlete, but then when I went back there as a coach on Woody's staff, I came to know a whole different man. And I think it's characterized, one story that pops in my head, Jack, was that when Coach Hayes invited me to come back and be a coach on the staff, he gave me a book. It was a hardbound book, and it was about an inch, maybe inch and a half thick. The title of the book was What I Know About Football by W.W. Hayes. And I looked at this as he gave it to me, and I was kind of perplexed because I thought I had read or was familiar with all of his books, but I had not seen this one before. And so we finished our meeting, and I get out in the hallway, and I open the book. I wanted to look immediately at the index to see what pearls of wisdom I'd find in this book of What I Know About Football by W.W. Hayes. What I discovered was every page in that book was blank. There wasn't a printed word in the entire book. And from that day, and then when I realized that, I turned to walk back into his office thinking that I got the wrong or the bad book in the lot. And he was standing in the doorway, and he looked at me, and he said, he called me Dutchman. He said, Dutchman, you're going to be amazed at what you're going to learn from a book that's got no words in it. So from that day until today, that book sits in the corner of my desk right next to my Bible. And one book has all the words, one book has no words. And I learn so much from both of them every day. But I'll tell you how I use that book, not only as a personal reference and guide for myself, but over the years, since 1974, when Coach Hayes gave me that book, I've had the privilege to speak to many, many groups of coaches and student athletes. And I always show them this book, and I tell them the story, how I came by it. And then they realize very quickly, they see the book, and there's no printed words. There's nothing in the book. But then I proceed to tell them what I've learned from the book. For example, in chapter one, what I've learned, the title of that chapter was Hard Work. And obviously, I make up the titles of each chapter since there are no words in the book. But that has to do with the message I'm trying to deliver to whatever group I'm speaking to. So once again, not only was there a great personal reference for me, but I've been able to use that book on so many occasions to help people learn core values and so many different messages that Coach Hayes taught us.
We're talking to Dutch Boffman. When we come back, we'll ask him about the love-hate relationship between Bo and Woody. I'm Jack Krasula. This is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
This is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR with Jack Krasula.
We're talking to Dutch Boffman, who played football for Woody Hayes and then coached under him at Ohio State. Dutch, there was this love-hate relationship between Woody Hayes and Bo Schembechler. Can you share a story or two?
Oh, my, Jack. When I first went to Ohio State, I was not really truly aware of the breadth and depth of the rivalry. I heard so much about that school up north. And obviously, my first experience was as we prepared for the competition, and it was something that was referred to throughout the entire season, not just the week before the game, obviously. But when I came back to coach with Coach Hayes, there was a moment in during that time that is so vivid in my mind. We were sitting in our offices in the evening having coaches' meetings, and the phone rang, and it was Coach Schembechler's wife. And he was calling to tell Coach Hayes that Bo had a heart attack and was not doing real well. Well, everybody on our staff, all the assistant coaches, had additional duties in addition to what we responsibilities we had as coaches. And one of my responsibilities was to really be Woody's driver. And so there were so many occasions every evening I would take him to study table or to the hospital to visit people or wherever, but on this particular evening, after Mrs. Schembechler called, Coach Hayes looked at me and nodded, and that just meant we were going to get in a car and go someplace. Well, I knew we were going to Michigan. We were going to Detroit, and we got in there very late that evening, walked into the hospital, and the security guard greeted us at the front door. And he looked at Coach Hayes, and he said, good evening, Coach. We've been expecting you. And I thought, wow. That's remarkable. So we walked into the hospital, and this guard escorted us to Coach Schembechler's room. We paused in the doorway, and Woody first exchanged greetings with Mrs. Schembechler and hugged her and said some very tender things to her. And then Woody went over to Bo's bed and leaned over the bedside and put an arm around his shoulder and knelt down and whispered in Bo's ear. And, of course, nobody could really hear what he was saying, and we didn't ask Coach afterward what he said. That was really none of our business, but it was a very special time between Woody and Bo. And Bo's eyes lit up, and he smiled, and Woody kissed him on the head. And that night, Woody stayed in the hospital and sat in a chair next to Bo for the night. And I'll never forget that because you know, obviously, going into that, I was very much aware of the rivalry and the competition between the two schools. But I had heard Coach Hayes on so many occasions refer to Coach Schembechler with great respect in not only his ability to coach the game of football, but the lessons he taught his players and the kind of man he was. And so that was really the first occasion I had to see Coach Schembechler in person, but then to witness that special time between Woody and Bo was remarkable. And I realized then that this was much more than a rivalry, and that while we have our foes and we have our rivals and we compete with every day, it's not to say we can't love them. So a great lesson from Coach Hayes on that occasion.
Dutch, what do all the great coaches have in common?
That's an intriguing question, Jack, and I really have pondered that and ciphered on that over my adult lifetime. And I think there are some common characteristics. They all are complex individuals. They're very good at what they do, but they have qualities about them that may not always be transparent. For example, even as strong a presence as coaches would have, Bobby Dodd and Bear Bryant and Woody Hayes and Bo Schembechler and on, they all had a very, very special level of humility about them. that no matter how successful their teams were, the credit was always given to the coaches and the student athletes that won the games. And I learned so much about leadership from Coach Hayes, but also watching so many other great coaches over the years. Obviously, they had great work habits. They had an ability to communicate very clearly to the people around them. They had a great compassion for the people around them. And I personally watched Coach Hayes just do so many things for student athletes. I mean, obviously well within the rules, but on a compassionate level to help them as human beings, to help them as people. And I've seen over the years now, not all great leaders have that ability, but there are so many other qualities, Jack. But I think humility, compassion, ability to communicate, that those are the qualities that I think that I admire so much in great leaders.
We're talking to Dutch Boffman. When we come back, we'll ask him about the end of another era, Lloyd Carr. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Brought to you by Trust in Us, a world-class executive search firm. Once again, here's your host, Jack Krasula.
Welcome back. We're with Dutch Boffman, whose given name is Dale. Dutch, a week and a half ago, Lloyd Carr walked out a winner. It's an away game down in Orlando. They have four turnovers. They're playing against the Heisman Trophy winner, Florida. And they beat Florida. Talk about Lloyd Carr.
Jack, this is this gives me chill bumps to think about this question. You know, in my position, I'm supposed to be very impartial in each competition. But I have to tell you, I was thrilled to see Michigan win that game. I sit on the board of the Bobby Dodd Foundation, and each year that board has a very comprehensive process to select a football coach of the year. And it was my honor this year, after our board meeting and the selection process, to call Coach Carr. And I had the pleasure of telling him that he had just been selected to receive the Bobby Dodd Foundation Football Coach of the Year Award. The beauty of that is it'll be presented in Ann Arbor, unlike any other Coach of the Year awards, presented on campus in the community so that family, friends, student athletes, coaches, and so on can all be there to participate in the great honor. But in talking with Coach Carr, it was such a thrill not only to tell him he'd been selected, but a man that I personally have admired for so long, because he truly does uphold the qualities of Coach Bobby Dodd and the great coaches we've talked about today. When I called him, he shared with me something we were not aware of, that Coach Carr grew up in Tennessee in a small town only 10 miles from the town where Bobby Dodd grew up. So this particular award was something very, very special to him, not only to recognize his accomplishments, but it actually goes back to his heritage. But Coach Carr is a very special man, and I had the pleasure of watching their bowl game. And after the bowl game, at his news conference, they asked him, "Well, what did you say to the players after the game?" And he said, "Well, I told them I loved them, and I thanked them." Then he paused and looked in the camera, and he said, "Because that's what great leaders do." And here's a team that got beat by a 1AA school at the beginning of the year, and they end the season beating Florida in a major bowl game. And he goes out with such dignity and class. And it's just something I'll always remember. And it's a great lesson, not only for those folks within our profession, but for everybody.
We're talking to Dutch Boffman. When we come back, we'll ask him about the role he's playing for the last 10 years. I'm Jack Krasula. This is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back to Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Presented by Trust in Us, a world-class executive search firm. Now, here's your host, Jack Krasula.
We're talking to Dutch Boffman. It's 1997, Dutch, and you agree to become the first executive director of the Division 1A Athletic Directors Association. Why'd you do that?
Jack, at that time, my close friends who were involved in the selection process told me that I was making a great mistake to accept this position, and they actually apologized. At that time, they did a survey of the membership and said, here's the job or position description of this executive director position. Please make any changes you'd like to make, but also tell us who you would like to recommend for this position. And after just a couple weeks of that survey out to the 1A athletic directors, the officers called and said that they were embarrassed to tell me that my name had been selected or had come up quite often from the membership, and that they were apologizing because the position was pretty much undefined. We didn't really know what direction to go. The only advice the board had for me was just go grow this thing. And what's interesting, Jack, was in about a three-year period of time, those very same close friends that were telling me that I was making a mistake and taking this position were calling me asking if I had decided when I might retire so this position would come available for someone else to have it. It's been a wonderful 10 years, 11 years now, and the purpose of what we do, the reason this is so good, and the reason I selected or I decided to accept the offer back in 1997 was that how often do you really get an opportunity to devote your time and efforts to an entire profession and do it on a national level and see if you can do things to make a profession and the impact of a profession optimally better. And so that was my motivation, and really looking back on it, it was kind of a blessing that there wasn't a lot of directive on what to do, because we were able to go in a lot of different directions and create a lot of different initiatives. The bottom line to all of it is that we are here to serve the 1A athletic directors. Now, there's 119 universities across the United States, very soon to be 120, and over the 10 years, we've developed so many initiatives. We have an institute that we host in July that is comprised of senior-level associate athletic directors to help them prepare to become athletic directors. We have at least 70 participants each year at our institute. The faculty is comprised of 1A athletic directors who freely give of their time to come and teach at this institute. It's unlike any other kind of program in that we don't teach how to do things. We ask the faculty to come and share their experiences in specific areas. So that institute has been remarkable in the impact it's had in helping prepare the next generation of athletic directors. It's helped to strengthen our profession. Over the past 10, 11 years, we've had remarkable cooperation from the NCAA, the American Football Coaches Association, the Women's Basketball Coaches Association, the National Association of Basketball Coaches. I could go on and on, Jack. The cooperation and support from all these different affiliate groups has just been extraordinary. So we've been able to do some pretty remarkable things. About 2 years ago, we actually had a bill passed in Congress. And 10 years ago, had you mentioned to me that we would be involved in such a thing, I wouldn't even been able to tell you how that works. But through the cooperation and affiliation we developed with the commissioners of the NFL, the NBA, and Major League Baseball, we created a small alliance of these four groups and got a bill passed in Congress that made an enormous impact on virtually every athletic team, college and pro, across the country. And so we've had kind of a clear slate to go in whatever direction we feel is necessary to help the profession and to strengthen the profession. And looking back over the past 10 years, we've been absolutely blessed that the initiatives that we've created have worked. We just had one this year that I'm very, very pleased with. The NCAA called us in January, asked our assistants to help develop a program where minority assistant coaches would have a better process in the hiring situations on campuses. And I'm so pleased to say that during this past right now, with 17 schools searching for new head football coaches, at least 15 of the 17 formally interviewed minority candidates and two were hired. We've never seen that kind of improvement in a particular area before, especially that area. And we have to thank the athletic directors for their cooperation and their agreement that this is very important issue and something we need to do a much better job with. So we have great cooperation from a lot of people, but the bottom line, Jack, is that everything we do every day is to serve the 1A athletic directors and their staff in virtually any kind of issue that arises.
How can we learn more about your association?
Well, you know, really, I've come to realize if we're not in the newspaper, we're doing our best job. Because we're not about getting involved in controversial issues or things that might be newsworthy to sports fans, because we deal so much with technical issues that pertain to the athletic director. I think the best way is to really understand the role of the athletic director in today's society has evolved to that of a CEO. And to know more about what we do would be to know more about what your local athletic director does, and to see the kinds of complexities that they have to deal with and the difficult decisions they have to make. And that in light of all of that, being a CEO, they don't lose focus of the fact that the welfare of the student-athlete is the most important thing we have to deal with. So watching what your local athletic director does would help you learn more about what we do.
Dutch, you're a master at getting disparate groups of people to work together, whether they're athletic directors, coaches, presidents of universities, students, commissioners. That's tougher than ranching. How do you do that?
Well, I don't believe no is a complete sentence. So if I ask somebody for their cooperation or their involvement in something and they're reluctant, I don't accept that. My goal is to help people understand why it might be important to be involved in particular issues, what the optimal outcome might be, and how we can do this best if we all work together. And that's what, you know, one of the things, like I mentioned, Jack, is looking back over the past 10 years, the level of cooperation we've had has just been remarkable. And whether I'm speaking to university presidents or athletic directors or coaches or student athletes or whomever, my approach and the message is always the same. If you're genuine, if you're humble in your approach, if it's not about you, if they realize that there's a genuine concern and compassion for whatever the issue might be, I've just been thoroughly amazed at how quickly and thoroughly people want to be involved in the solution of whatever the issue might involve. So we're absolutely blessed to have had such great cooperation, but I kind of approach everybody the same way, and not afraid to ask their help, not afraid to ask their involvement. And like Brad Faxon says, the great golfer on the PGA, they asked him one time, what's his secret to being so proficient in putting? He said, I'm not afraid to miss. Well, I'm not afraid to have some president or AD or somebody tell me no on some issue because they realize I'm not going to accept it.
We're talking to Dutch Boffman, who's really professionalized the Division 1A Athletic Directors Association. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Trust in Us, a world-class executive search firm, presents Anything Is Possible with Jack Krasula on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back. We're with Dutch Boffman, the executive director of the Division 1A Athletic Directors Association. Dutch, arguably your association is in the business of transforming our youth today. How have college kids changed in the last 20 to 30 years?
Well, Jack, you're exactly right. That is a cornerstone and a foundation of not only our association, but of our profession. We constantly refocus on the fact that the welfare of the student-athlete is the most important thing we have to concern ourselves with. And we have seen tremendous changes in the student-athletes over the past 10, 15 years. It was said many years ago, one of the challenges we have in our profession in recruiting is we have to go into society to find our student-athletes. And it's so true, because whatever society ills or society trends we might witness, we're going to see that in our student athletes. There have been a lot of changes. Today, student athletes need much more clarity They are not just going to respond to orders and directives. They need clarity in why guidelines and standards are being set. They need compassion. I still believe that the programs I see that are most successful are those that have set a standard of discipline, both imposed by the program itself and the expectation of self-discipline, and programs that help student-athletes understand how to develop self-discipline if they come to the program without it. But a big part of this is, you know, the old adage, if you want to catch fish, you need to think like a fish. Well, it's hard sometimes for an older coach to understand the mindset of younger student-athletes, but that's so necessary. And it's also very important that athletic directors and coaches have staff and people around them to support this effort that also are very much in tune with the mindset and the needs of the student-athletes. But one of the general messages is, let's don't sacrifice our standards to comply with what we perceive to be the attitudes of student-athletes. It's still our responsibility to teach them the important core value lessons of life.
You said something, we don't want to change our standards. What do you say to a listener tonight who's trying to teach a son, a daughter, a grandson values, ethics, integrity, when these young people are going through just one landmine after another of all these vices out there?
Well, Jack, you know, one of the great changes we have seen today with student-athletes and youngsters is that there are so many more influences that affect them, that impact them, than there were 10, 15 years ago. So many more things that can redirect their thinking, whether good or bad. And we have to recognize what those kinds of things are. But the most important thing that we say to coaches and administrators is that not only must you establish the standards and clearly communicate what those standards are, what the expectations are, what the acceptable standards of performance and behavior truly are, but then the coaches and the student athlete, or the coaches and administrators, must also live their lives that way. The same is true in parenting. I believe parenting is the greatest privilege we have on this earth, and that the responsibility we have is exactly the same. We have to establish standards for our youngsters, and we have to live our own lives in accordance with those standards. So that means when you verbalize the importance of following a set of core values and ethical behavior, that means then that you must also perform your daily life in accordance with those same values.
I was at a restaurant recently, Dutch, and there's a table next to me of five couples, all in their 40s, no doubt friends, related to each other.
Yes, sir.
And they're talking. And then at an adjacent table is a table of young kids from, let's say, 8 to 15. And in that hour and a half, I never saw one of those 10 kids talk to each other. Each one of them had their own cell phone, their iPod, and the whole time their text messaging, whatever. Talk about to parents what MySpace, Facebook, text messaging is doing to our youth.
Jack, that's a tough one because, I have a 16-year-old daughter, so I've had to come to understand the essence of exactly what you're asking, not only from a professional level, but personal level. First thing I had to do was recognize the fact that text messaging and so on are methods of normal communication today for today's youth. It's totally foreign to how I grew up or people in my generation and so on. So we have to accept the fact that it's there, it's available, and it's a standard form of communication. However, that's not to say that it's not the responsibility of the parent or the coach or the teacher or whomever to set standards. For example, recognizing that is a normal method of communication, allow a student-athlete, allow a youngster time to participate in that kind of communication, but set the standards as to when that's going to be appropriate. If you don't do that, when they find themselves at time in their school, for example, when there's not necessarily direct supervision, they could possibly falter and be text messaging during a class. So I think it's important that they learn when it's appropriate, when it's not, but the fact is they're going to do it. And you need to direct and give them some guidelines on why it's appropriate to text, message, and communicate different times. We're very much concerned about the MySpace kind of thing. We understand that's also a way that the kids communicate today. I also have a son who has two children, and he has a MySpace site. He puts pictures of his kids on the MySpace site so that their friends and family can go to that site and see current pictures. So there's a value to that. But it's another vehicle that is clearly misused by so many kids because they put personal information on there, and they need to understand that there are people that have access to viewing that kind of information that could be less than honorable in why they're looking at that space. We also tell student-athletes you need to understand that today employers are looking at MySpace ads. So when they look at your MySpace ad and your theme is party like a rock star, you may not be necessarily the person they want to offer a job to. So that has been a real rude awakening to a lot of student-athletes that what they thought was a communication with their friends is clearly accessible to so many others.
What's your biggest dream for this new year in your role?
Wow. I think we've reached a level of effectiveness and influence within our profession. And it's kind of like a team that has won a championship and then two and so on. And you hear them talking about three-peats and so on. The biggest challenge for me right now is to sustain what we've accomplished over the past 10 years. But I fully realize, and this is a lesson from Coach Hayes, you're either always getting better or you're getting worse, but you never have a status quo. Because if you maintain the status quo, your competition is getting better during that same time. So you always need to improve. You always need to get better. So we're going to try to sustain what we've accomplished over the past 10 or 11 years and also continue to develop the new initiatives that will continue to support and serve the 1A athletic directors.
We have a minute left, Dutch. Last question. What advice would you give to our young listeners tonight as they start 2008?
We have opportunity to talk with parents and youngsters about this kind of question, Jack, and the best thing I can say is that it's so important for youngsters to find what they're truly passionate about, you know, where their aptitudes lie and so on, but to be in touch with their core values. And right at the top of that core value list needs to be hope. Most people look at hope as something they do, but I think the Christian ethic says hope is something that we have. So we need to make sure youngsters understand, find what your compassion, where your passion is, what you do best, what you really like to do, in a very positive, productive way, and always maintain a level of humility and have hope as a cornerstone of how you proceed.
Dutch, I want to thank you for coming on, and I want to thank you for the job you've done these last 11 years, really professionalizing and bettering our athletic associations.
Well, thank you so much, Jack. It's always a pleasure to visit with you.
Our guest next Sunday will be John Bacon, world-class writer who co-authored a book with Bo Schembechler just before Bo passed, entitled Bo on Leadership. And we'll talk to John about spending over 500 hours with Bo and his values. Until then, I'm Jack Krasula. Thanks for listening, and make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spohm.